Hello everyone, and welcome to minute 21 of season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Jeanette Ward of the Adventures of a
fangirl, right?
Did I get that
That's
right?
That's right. The mundane adventures.
The mundane adventures of a fangirl. Okay,
because
I was close.
They're not
Sorry.
Interesting. They're mundane. My adventures are very low key.
Right. Okay. Sorry about that. hopefully, all week I won't forget it. I was close. I just forgot to write it down beforehand.
Probably, there's enough words in that title where we could mix them up and do it differently each day.
If you want, I can do that. I don't know if that's going to be good for you getting, you know, people to go to your site. If I keep saying different things, you know, people are going to be doing searches for Fangirl Adventures, a mundane of.
Yes.
I can't find anything. Google. It's not listed on Google. I don't know. So I think you probably we should stick with the original. We'll do that.
Absolutely. The mundane adventures of a fangirl. Here I am, and I'm happy to be here.
Yes. Well, thank you for joining me. Thank you for I know you took off last season because, you know, rom-coms are not your thing, but I'm glad to have you back yippee-carrying our way through another Die Hard movie.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate you coming back. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
So episode 21 begins with Lorenzo continuing his diatribe and ends with Carmine trying to explain how busy he is. So yesterday, on Friday, we ended things with basically, you know, John comes to Captain Carmine Lorenzo's office and is trying to explain to him why they need to do things here. And Carmine doesn't really want to, doesn't care. You know, he doesn't want anything to do with it. As far as he's concerned, you know, I guess they need to put a cop into the mix like they did in the first movie that, you know, doesn't like the character of McLean. I mean, they do that in the next one also, you know, I don't know. I do like Dennis Franz more than I enjoyed
Paul Gleason.
Yeah. I mean, I think Paul Gleason was a great actor. There's no question about that. But his character, you're not supposed to like. And I don't think, and Paul Gleason rarely plays a character that you're going to like.
Yes.
But here, you know, Dennis Franz is a guy that I've seen in numerous movies and I've loved him in it. I mean, did you ever see the movie The Package with Gene Hackman?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's been years.
Okay. So that you should rewatch it. And anyone listening should also rewatch it. It's a great movie. It's with Gene Hackman, Tommy Lee Jones, and Dennis Franz. And it's all about it. It's like a conspiracy movie about, you know, this group of people that are trying to assassinate someone. I won't say who, the president. And basically, you know, Dennis Franz plays a cop who used to be best friends with Gene Hackman's character when they were they were in Vietnam together. You know, and they're like best friends, and he goes to him for help. And Dennis Franz is just great in that movie. I know I saw The Package before I saw this movie because I saw The Package in the theater in 89 when it came out. I mean, it's only a year before this one came out. But I probably didn't make the connection between Dennis Franz of The Package and Dennis Franz of Die Hard probably till after he started, you know, showing his butt on NYPD Blue. That's probably like the point where everyone started saying, oh, well, we actually know
like,
who
this,
Dennis Franz is.
Right. And do you have offhand, because I didn't look this up and I should have, when NYPD Blue, like, when was the height of Dennis Franz's NYPD Blue bare-bottomed success? Was that right around this time or was it slightly
No,
after?
It wasn't. No, it was after. Okay. As from what I remember, NYPD Blue only debuted in 94.
Okay, so it was
so we're still 4 years away.
Die Hard 2. What's interesting is
No, sorry, 93. There you go. It came out in 93. So we're still right. Talking 3 years from now.
When you told me you were doing Die Hard 2, I requested these minutes. These are my favorite minutes in the movie, which is crazy because, admittedly, they're exposition. But they're exposition hidden in an argument between Dennis Franz and Bruce Willis. And the two of them play this perfectly. And I love scenes that take exposition and shove it into something else so you almost don't realize you're getting a huge exposition dump in the middle of a sequence. Dennis Franz, between him and Dennis Farina, the two most Chicagoiest cops guys on the planet, and no matter what you put them in, they still feel like a Chicago cop.
Right.
I feel like he's supposed to be the head of security at this airport, which I believe is Washington, D.C.
Yes, but it's Dulles. Still,
the most Chicago a guy can be, why he's not wearing like a Bears hat is beyond me.
Well, because he's in Washington,
and he's on the job. Right. I love the sequence. I love all the dialogue. I love everything they say to one another. I love Dennis Franz's performance. And I love the way Bruce Willis is irritated by the entire sequence. It's fantastic.
Well, they're both irritated by each other. That's the great part about it.
Yes.
So, I mean, that works too. I mean, he has 57 credits in IMDb. And the latest credit that he has, which is really shocking to me, is NYPD Blue. Basically, he hasn't acted since 2005, and that's after 261 episodes of NYPD Blue. He's the only character.
You don't need to.
That's right. He's the only character who was on every single episode of the show. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, you have even Gordon Clapp was on. He was on five episodes less. And then if you jump down, the next actor or character who has the most appearances in NYPD Blue is James McDaniel with 167. So we're talking 100 episodes difference that Dennis Franz and Gordon Clapp were in that nobody else was. So
and talking about the timeline, knowing that NYPD Blue debuted so much after this movie came out, it's so interesting because I don't believe I saw Die Hard 2 in the theater. Probably one of those where you rent it over and over again and watch it a bunch of times, and perhaps not as good as the first Die Hard, but it is very, very good and certainly entertaining and very fun to watch. Same formula, but just enough different that it keeps you on the edge of the seat. The action's fantastic, but the having not seen it in the theater and being aware of NYPD Blue, probably by the time I saw this, or certainly by the time I rewatched this at the level I did in college, my roommate Allison, shout out to Alice, she's listening.
Make sure she listens.
More,
there you go.
Send more than her. Anyone I have met was the biggest Bruce Willis fan. And so at least 2 to 3 times a week, we were watching Bruce Willis movies. And this one is one that we watch over and over again. And so by that time, because that would have been, 95, 96, Sipowicz was already a thing. So it was very much that McClane was having an argument with Sipowicz. It took me a second to even remember that his name was Carmine Lorenzo in this movie, because it was just John McClane yelling at Sipowicz.
That's actually very funny. Well, you know, if Allison, are you still in touch with Allison?
Yeah.
Okay, so you should tell her to be listening to
my
season of regular Die Hard, and now this season, and tell her that if she wants, if she's that much of a fan like you are, I'm willing to have her on as a guest in the future.
Oh, I'll let her know. Yeah, that might be kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it could be with you too if you want.
Nice.
That's up to you guys. So basically, he starts his whole diatribe Friday, and he continues today by saying, "Running around my airport with a gun, shooting at people. What do you call that shit?" And it's funny that first of all, I like the fact that he says my airport. He is the cop. He's the chief of police of the airport, but it's his airport.
Yes.
It's not the airport of anyone in the tower. It's not the airport of anyone else who has some sort of job in the airport. This is his police precinct, so therefore it's his airport. Mm-hmm. And I love how he says shooting at people. I mean, I don't know if John, I don't know if you could say what John was doing in the last 2 weeks is really shooting at people. That would make it sound like he's just standing there, like picking people off. It's like,
yeah, just in the center of the busy part of the airport, firing the gun in the air.
Which he didn't do. He was in a secluded luggage area doing that.
Chasing a gun, yes.
Chasing, punks that are trying to steal luggage, so it makes sense. And
I also love this office. Being lectured about shooting, and I call it self-defense. Fantastic. And I
love self-defense.
And that fancy LA badge isn't going to get you a free lunch here. Okay. But while he's saying this, outside the window, the snow, but the so clearly a set snow.
Yes. Okay.
Where
So
it
I don't know
looks
if
like
you've
he is.
listened. I don't know if you've listened to the commentary of this by Renny Harlin or not, but he specifically points out the fact that, they wanted to make it seem as if they said it's completely on a set, but they wanted to make it seem as if it really is snow. So they said they made sure that the entire time there's fake snow behind him, and they made it look like, we're dealing with a blizzard outside type of thing. So it's great.
Because the snow is halfway out the window, it looks like it's the quality of like a public museum a diorama
Yes.
of like an Arctic scene where it looks maybe like it's 2 feet deep and it's plant, tree, bush covered in fake snow.
Yeah, and it works. Why not? I'm sure the set
Does
designer had
it?
a lot of fun with that
Absolutely.
one.
And that's how what I need to remember. Yes.
Yeah. Right. And so he continues and says, "What, you think that LA badge is going to get you a free lunch or something around here?" And so John responds, "Maybe a little professional courtesy, huh? In an airport on Christmas week?" So, I love the fact that he goes, "You've got to be kidding." And I mean, that is not the type of response you would normally expect to get from somebody who's supposed to be service oriented. For him to say, "What,
And
you
shouldn't
actually
security
expect
be
me to
even
give you
higher?
courtesy?" That's right. "You expect me to give you
Yes.
courtesy during the week of Christmas? Come on, you got to be
But
kidding."
that's what I love is that again, let's throw all the exposition in it. Just in case you weren't sure where or what time of year it was, he's very clear about you're in an airport in Christmas week. It's very busy.
Well, that's Die
I
Hard. Come
appreciate it.
on.
Make it very clear. So in case I had forgotten, I love it.
That's right. And then John, I love John's response. He goes, "Okay, f courtesy. How about being professional?" I mean, I have a sign in my office that says, "It's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice."
Important to be nice.
There you go. And
Carmine does not have that sign in his office.
no, he does not. He has a propeller.
He has the tiny plane and a yes.
The type of thing that people have, like if they have a deer on their wall or they have like a shark, it looks like you'd have like a
Yes.
shark jumping out of the wall at that point, with the just like a propeller. I was actually wondering if this propeller is maybe a clock, which would be
Oh,
really cool if
interesting.
it was, but I don't think it is. It's just
No, I think it's a propeller.
it's situated like it could be a clock, that type of thing.
It's
And
another one of those things where the set designer was like, we got to make it look like he's the head of security in an airport. And I'm like,
that's
put a
right.
propeller on the wall.
And there's a whole bunch of like model airplanes in the room also,
Yes,
on his
don't
desk and
forget.
stuff like that. Yeah. So wait a second.
You're
Where
in an
are
airport.
we? Where are we?
You're
Where
in an airport on Christmas
oh,
week.
we're in an airport on Christmas week. That's right. And then John continues, goes, "Your boys just walked away from a crime scene. You can't wrap this up in 10 minutes. You got to seal the area
And
off. Dust
nope.
for prints." Now, I love the fact that he's saying this to Sipowicz, "You can't wrap this up in 10 minutes," because, of course you can't do it in 10 minutes. It takes 42 minutes.
That's right.
That's a TV show.
You need at least 42 minutes to
No, yeah,
successfully wrap.
at most, unless it's an episode that, unless it's like a string of episodes together. But
That or unless you got the B roll of the B storyline for that episode and
correct.
your storyline will take 10 minutes.
That's right. That's true. But it's just funny that he says it in this way, and us knowing the future, we know the fact that this is Sipowicz. So I just thought it was really funny. He goes, "In 10 minutes," and he goes, "You got to seal the area off, dust for prints." And he shouts back and goes, "Hey, don't lecture me, hotshot. I know what I'm doing. We're gonna dust it down. We'll take all the pictures. We'll sweep for fibers. When are you gonna do this? After 400 people go through? You'd be lucky you get a print from one of your own people. Shut down the area. Oh, shut down the area. It's that simple, huh? Just shut the area down. Yeah, I got everybody from the Shriners Convention to the goddamn Boy Scouts in here. I got lost kids, lost dogs, and typical movie trope, someone always walks in when someone's giving a list like this, and he screams, "Not now, later."
That is fantastic. As he is running down this list, everyone from the Shriners to the Boy Scouts, which again, great
Lost
way
kids,
to this
lost
is
dogs.
XA and
And I
diplomats,
got
great
international
way to
diplomats.
throw in. Yep, exposition that he's throwing into this tirade, and then
Correct.
the
And
not
then,
now, later.
and that's right. And do you think
There's
the
no
it?
punctuation in that. In the There's no commas, there's no pauses, there's no not now, later, period.
Correct.
I love it.
That's right. Do you think the international diplomats he's talking about the Esperanza?
I think it's a hint to those of us who don't know that's coming to pay attention that that might be a thing that's coming.
Yeah, but you'd think that he would have, as you mentioned earlier, he would have more security knowing that we're dealing now
I
with.
would think that, yes, but it's an airport on Christmas week.
That's right.
They're very busy.
That's right.
They
And
don't
then
have time for all of
that's right. And then he
this.
continues and goes, "I got a f-ing reindeer." And then he gets cut off at this minute.
Yes.
So I actually wanted to go back and talk about some of the things that he says here. So first of all, the idea of self-defense. Okay, when John responds to him, that, what do you call that? What do you call that? And he goes, self-defense. Okay, so I mean, my first thought was, okay, I would look up what does it mean, to learn self-defense, stuff like that. But then I realized that we're talking about the legal concept of self-defense. And do you know that there are other names to the legal theory or concept of self-defense?
Oh.
It can be called the alter ego defense,
Interesting.
the defense of others, or the defense of a third person.
Okay.
It's the right for people to use reasonable or defensible force for the purpose of defending one's own life or the lives of others, including in certain circumstances, the use of deadly force. So, hey, I think according to that, John is okay here.
Yeah. He is correct.
As we'll learn later in the week, he kept a low life,
Yeah, that's right. He kept a low life.
That's right. So, and then it continues by explaining that if a defendant uses defensive force because of threat of deadly or grievous harm to the other person or a reasonable perception of such harm, the defendant is said to have a perfect self-defense justification. If the defendant uses defensive force because of such a perception and the perception is not reasonable, the defendant may have an imperfect self-defense as an excuse. So, yeah, I mean, I have like pages and pages of this, but I'm not a lawyer and I don't really care about this stuff, so I'm not going to go into the whole idea of what where that actually comes from. But
Suffice it to say that McLean
I
is correct in stating that that is what he was doing.
yes, yeah, I think that is, but Carmine doesn't see it that way, which is very strange. You'd think that they have a dead body here in the luggage area.
Yes.
Check the fact that this guy is probably not a punk, a teen punk. You can Carmen didn't even leave his office to go see what's going on here. That amazes me the most. Here he is, the chief of police, and or the chief of the airport police, right?
Yes.
And there's a murder and he doesn't go to see what's going on. It's not like he has to drive across town. It's a question of, okay, why don't I go check out what's happening two floors below me or whatever. I mean, pretty soon later this week, we'll talk about the fact that his office is probably not very far
Right.
from where this happened.
Well, and I
But
think we'll
have to wait there and
we'll
see
talk
that.
about this later too, but the fact that he's so irate so quickly about the situation means that he obviously knows McClane is right. He obviously knows, but he also cannot admit that.
Correct. That's true. Okay, so the next thing I wanted to discuss was the phrase free lunch. Do you know the history of what that means? And now again, free lunch, it could be a real thing,
With
and it can
the
also
metaphor,
be just a figure of speech.
the we I will never forget learning tinstaffel, and I think I learned it in one of my high school economics classes. Tinstaffel, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
I don't know what tinstaffle is. What's tinstaffle?
Tinstaffel, literally, it's an acronym. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Tinstaffel,
Oh,
yeah.
okay.
That nothing always ever comes for free. It always has strings or consequences or tie-ins or yes. So that phrase always triggers that in my brain. Like, tinstaffel. Like it's stuck there and I never forget it. Someone needs to say, yeah, as long as
That's
it comes
really
with free
cool.
lunch.
I never even thought about that.
Yeah. So I assumed it meaning the metaphor, not the literal, like go out to the cart out there, use your LA badge to get yourself a free sandwich.
Right. So, I mean, basically, I looked up what a free lunch is. So, a free lunch is providing a meal at no cost, usually as a sales enticement to attract customers and increase revenues from other businesses. It was once a common tradition in saloons and taverns in many places in the US, with the phrase appearing in US literature from 1870 all the way up to the 1920s. These establishments included a free lunch, which varied from rudimentary to quite elaborate, with the purchase of at least one drink. These free lunches were typically worth far more than the price of a single drink. The saloon keeper relied on the expectation that most customers would buy more than one drink and that the practice would build patronage for other times of day.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually makes sense.
And that would be where the tinstaffel thing comes from as well. Like, yeah, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Like, it's the lunch is free, but you're paying for the drink. And the point is to get you in so that you keep spending. And yes. So there you go.
Right. And basically those ideas pretty much stopped during the Depression because it wasn't economically viable for people to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it never really came back. You know, sometimes, you know, you'll go to like casinos
that's what I was going to say. Casinos do a lot of that type of thing.
Lounges, taverns, happy hour, you know, those type of things
free
that they'll give you free appetizers.
It's a marketing tool.
Yes, it is. That it is. And then you have a free lunch fiend. Okay. Which is, it's a type of person in the 1870s. They refer to this. These were people, they were loafers or free lunchmen. Who toil not, neither do they spin, yet they get along. They visit saloons trying to bum drinks from strangers. Should this inexplicable lunch fiend not happen to be called to drink, he devours whatever he can, and while the bartender is occupied, tries to escape unnoticed.
Okay, that's something I didn't know about.
Right. So, there you go. So, right, so that's the literal term of free lunch. The idea also, as you mentioned, a free lunch is basically where you get something for basically doing very little. Mm-hmm. That's the idea, and that's what Carmen is referring to here. Okay. Then as he's going through all the different things, he mentions the Shriners. Do you know what the Shriners are?
Vaguely, yes. Right now they're kind of a charity organization, but I don't know where they started.
Okay. They were a Masonic society.
Mm-hmm.
Established in 1870, and they were originally known as the Ancient Arabic Order of the Nobles of the Mystic Shrine, which is AAONMS, and they were headquartered in Tampa, Florida.
Because of course they were.
It's still headquartered there, right? And they opened up a whole bunch of there are 200 different places around North America, South America, Europe, and Southeast Asia. And they also have hospitals for children that are all over the world also. It was actually created in 1870 by Freemasons in Manhattan who basically wanted to have a place to go for fun and fellowship, right? So there are these two guys named Walter Fleming and William Florence established it together back then.
Hmm.
1875, there were 43 members. And then by 1888, there were 7,200 members.
Wow.
And in 1900, there were 55,000 members.
Hmm.
And then it jumps in 1938, there were 340,000 members.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, yeah, I couldn't see the number that there is today. Let's put it this way. If it was 350,000 in 1938, they have a lot.
Yes.
There's no question about that. And they have hospitals in Boston, Chicago, Dayton, Erie, Pennsylvania, Galveston, Greenville, South Carolina, Honolulu, Houston, Lexington, Mexico City, Minneapolis, Montreal, Pasadena, Philadelphia, Portland, Sacramento, Salt Lake City, Shreveport, Louisiana, Spokane, Springfield, Massachusetts, and St. Louis.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing also. And they have college football all-star game.
Of course.
Which is known as the East-West Shrine Game.
Huh.
They have golf tournaments.
Sure, why wouldn't they?
And that's right. And who is the highlight of most of their golf tournaments? Justin Timberlake.
Really?
Yes. And the name of the golf tournament is the Justin Timberlake Shriners Hospital for Children's Open.
I had no idea.
Played in Las Vegas, but that was only up until 2012.
Hmm.
Because then they found out that Timberlake only wanted to be there when they had cameras around.
Yes, of course.
So I guess they right. Then they changed the name.
Yeah, I mean, he can't bring sexy back if no one's looking.
Correct. Second to last thing I want to mention about this is they mentioned the Boy Scouts. So in The Great Escape, we discussed a little bit about the Boy Scouts, mm-hmm. but we didn't really get into much of it. Back then, do you know when the Boy Scouts were founded?
Oh boy, 19. 1820 something.
1910.
Okay, see?
And there are over 110 million Americans who've participated in Boy Scouts of America programs. Oh, in the 100 and 113 years since then. You know, that's just crazy. That's a crazy number. And then they created the International, or the World Organization of the Scouts in 1922. So, yeah, that's pretty interesting. They have seven different ranks in the Scouts, and that's Scout, Tenderfoot, Second Class, First Class, Star Scout, Life Scout, and Eagle Scout.
Wow.
And you get merit badges and in order to move up from rank to rank and stuff like that. You have to do all these different you have to show that you are proficient in all these different activities and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was a Girl Scout for many years in similar layout.
Okay. How many badges did you get?
Wow. You know, I still have them. Dozens. We were very badge focused. We got quite a few. We For Girl Scouts, you would get your badges and attach them to your sash. But my mom was our troop leader, and a lot of us were like, we don't really want to wear a sash. And she was like, all right, let's do this. And she got us all these like gray work shirts. And so we would put the badges on there instead of on a sash. And then we could put all the like the troop name badge and all the other badges and all the other things that, because the Girl Scouts at the time had very specific rules about where your badges were supposed to go on your uniform and everything. And so when we had these shirts, we could put everything on the one shirt. It was very cool. And we went camping every year. We
Oh,
did the
wow.
badge activities. We did some service projects. Yeah, almost all the way through high school. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Very cool. And the last thing I wanted to discuss is he mentions about the reindeers.
Oh, yes.
So, do you know another name of a reindeer?
Caribou.
That is correct. And it is native to the Arctic, subarctic, tundra, boreal, and mountainous regions of Northern Europe, Siberia, and North America. And I didn't know this, that there are three different types of reindeer that they're not considered endangered, but they're considered vulnerable because a lot of people are killing them for their hides and for food and for things like that. Yeah, now I only knew about Santa and the reindeer. You know, never thought about anything else, and because that's pretty much where you only see them, and which is why this is a Christmas movie. And there you
Of course.
go. Throw in and let's throw in their Christmas reasons that this is a Christmas
Right,
movie.
of course.
So my question then is, after he's listing all these different things that he's doing, what is actually the job of the airport police?
Well, my assumption is
Because they don't investigate murders,
that
okay? They're too busy dealing with lost dogs, lost kids, Boy Scouts, Shriners, international diplomats, and reindeers. So I'm trying to figure out what it is that they actually do. I'm not belittling them. I'm trying to understand. Please, any airport cops who are listening, I do respect
Well, my
because I'm
guess is
assuming you do
that
your job much better than Carmine.
this movie taking place prior to the role of an airport cop is probably much different now than it was at that point. And so that would also be interesting.
That's probably true also. But is a TSA member considered part of being an airport cop? I don't know.
And is airport cop different than, I mean, regular cop or same level training, different training? TSA, he's clearly not TSA, but is TSA somehow new as the TSA? Anyway.
I think the TSA only happened after 9/11. I don't think there was a TSA before.
See, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's what I would think. So, do you have anything else about this minute before we get into the script?
Just that, yeah, the window outside the window looks like a museum diorama. Yeah, there's just that it's exposition frame, and I love it. And the
All right,
not now
cool.
later, which is my favorite yelling
Yes.
of all things.
It reminds me, I think it was in Star Trek 4 that the same thing happened also. You know, when Scotty is showing the guy how to make, showing him how to make
Oh,
the
yes.
plexiglass.
And they go, not now.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, that reminded me
Transparent
of that.
aluminum.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so the script has a few changes here, actually. I'll just read through what it says here. It basically skips part of the beginning of it. I mean, we talked about that a little bit on Friday, that their conversation at the beginning is very, very short. And then Lorenzo says, "Yeah, I know. You think that LA badge is going to get you a free lunch or something down here? No, just a little professional courtesy. In an airport Christmas week, you got to be kidding. Okay, forget the courtesy. How about just a professional? Your boys just walked away from a crime scene. You need to seal it off, get a forensics team in, dust it, shoot it. And what do we do with all the luggage from all the airplanes while we play Charlie Chan? Do you know who Charlie Chan is?
Yes,
Was?
that's interesting.
Charlie Chan is a fictional Honolulu police detective that was created by the author Earl Dare Biggers for a whole bunch of mystery novels. And his main villain was, do you know who his main villain was?
No.
Fu Manchu.
Oh, of course.
And then they had a whole bunch of movies and TV shows and I think comic strips and a whole bunch of different things about Charlie Chan. And then Carmine continues with his diatribe and says, and McClane answers him and says, "You store them somewhere." Oh, and meanwhile, every hour, a few more thousand people come and they want to put their luggage on airplanes, so we store them and their luggage in some other somewhere.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So,
I don't mind that that was
I
not
like the way they
included. It
changed
didn't
it.
add anything.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. They truncated. I like the back and forth in the movie itself. I think it works better.
I
So
see.
I'm glad that they made this change.
Yeah, me too.
Right, and that's the only differences with the script. So every Monday we have a segment called McClane Monday, where my guests will give their top five Bruce Willis films. So
Yes.
why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Start with my number five. The first thing I want to say is that my five and my six were kind of even. I had Blind Date and Hudson Hawk. I enjoy Hudson Hawk. It's admittedly a terrible movie, but it's one of those where anytime I happen to catch it on
So is
TV,
Blind Date.
well, exactly, yes. I feel like Blind Date might be technically better crafted than Hudson Hawk. But either of them, if I happen to catch either of them on TV, I will sit and watch the whole thing. I find them.
Okay, well, pick one.
I'm
Pick
going to
one.
say Hudson Hawk
Okay.
then.
Hudson Hawk, I just love the fact that they sing throughout the whole thing.
They sing it too. Yes, the measuring a specific amount of time by singing a song is great. Danny Aiello is great in that. A very young what's his name? Horatio Caine from CSI Miami. Yeah, it's an
David
insane
Caruso.
movie. That's him.
David Caruso, Connection to Sipowicz,
There you
NYPD
go.
Blue.
That's
There you
right.
go.
See, it
And
all
this
ties
movie,
together.
Don Harvey is in this in Die Hard 2 also. He plays Garber.
See?
He plays what's going on? Stewart's right-hand man. He's also there.
It's
So yeah.
fantastic. It's a real delve.
And
Real fun.
Connection to the Great Escape. And we have James Coburn there, which makes sense also. So yeah, we got connections all over the place. So okay, Hudson Hawk
Hudson Hawk,
is your
number
number
five.
five. All
Number
right.
four, Death Becomes Her with Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn.
Now, I enjoyed that when I saw it in the theater, but on subsequent watches, I didn't like it as much.
Okay.
I love the way that Zemeckis creates the special effects there. I mean, the special effects were just phenomenal.
Phenomenal. Yep.
But yeah, you don't like any of the characters.
Exactly. There's no one to
That's
root
part
for.
of the problem.
Yeah, there's no one to root for.
That's the
Everyone's terrible. Yeah.
except for Death.
You're right. Number three, Armageddon. I love some high quality Bayhem, and that movie is high quality Bayhem at the very, very best. The idea that a meteor is coming to destroy Earth and the only way to save us is to hire a roughneck oil driller and his crew, train them to be astronauts. Put them in a couple of shuttles, send them up to the astronaut, to the meteor, have them drill through it, place a bomb inside of it in order to save us all. It is absolute insanity, but my goodness, does it look fantastic. And Bruce Willis at the center of it plays it grounded, and he's the straight man where everybody else around him gets to go really, really big with their characters. So, yes, it's wonderful.
Yeah, and I think it's actually also the first time that Bruce Willis' his character dies in a movie.
Yeah, well, dies by sacrificing himself to save not only the crew, his daughter, son-in-law, but the entire planet. Come on.
Yes. Okay, that's true.
And then number two, The Fifth Element. Love that movie. Absolutely big, bombastic, Luc Besson, super sci-fi. Mila Jovovich playing the Fifth Element, which try not to get hung up on the age difference between her and Bruce Willis throughout the course of the movie. Gary Oldman
Or
as
the age difference between her and Luc Besson, but that's a separate issue.
Separate issue. But the mustache twirlingness bad guy vibes of Gary, costumes by Jean-Paul Gaultier, Chris Tucker stealing every scene he's in. That movie's great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Tiny Lister being the president of Earth. It's wonderful.
That's right.
And then number one, I have Die Hard, because it is the perfect action movie and near flawless. And there you go.
All right. Great. Thank you very much for that. So, Jeanette, yeah. You want to tell people where they can find you, now that we've established where you're from?
Where I'm from. You can find me on all the socials. You can find me. I tend to be mostly on Instagram nowadays, but you can also find me on Twitter. Oh boy, I'm at JY Ward on Instagram, and I think I'm Jeanette_Y_Ward on the Twitters and the Facebooks. And you can find my movie reviews on my blog at The Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl, which is jwardadventures.blogspot.com. There you go.
All right. Excellent. Great. Thank you very much for that. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rub Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, movierubminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little village.